that I've lost trust on Madison. I've stopped practicing. And I'm spending my life in telling the world what has happened to me. And I've become a sort of mentor. He said, I have rather started hating my profession. Why? He says that the love hates. He said, I am the example of it. Without any medication, the whole medical science is confused what exactly, how a man can live 14 years with one affected kidney. I have so much love, he said, I have acquired so much wealth of respect and love that somehow I am alive and I don't even know how. And every 6 months when he goes back to the hospital for his x-rays and a physical checkup, doctors are announcing that he is recovering. There's a documented book published in 96. Why? You know, America, countries are like America, they just don't take things as granted. I'm glad they don't have words like Mojzaji. You know, we just try to give this word Mojzaji ho gaya, but fine. They didn't get into it. And they came up with the psychology of love. They started researching on it. So, the very first, you know, the emotional master, if you really want to do something about yourself, remember one thing, that love heals. Loving your neighbors, loving your relationships, it really has the power to heal even a wound. But we need to take people as a whole package. We need to love and respect people unconditionally, no questions asked. We should not discriminate anyone because of number of things which he might not have. It heals. You cannot build your self-esteem. The whole damn psychology of self-esteem now announces. You cannot build your self-esteem at the cost of someone else. If you want to build your self-esteem, build someone else's. If you want to respect, get respect, respect someone. If you want to be loved, love someone. So it's basically staying win-win. But somehow, we are trying, these people coming from different behavioral backgrounds, they'll try to generate that feeling of being loved in you before they put you in a surgery. Unless you say, I want to live, they won't operate you. They won't touch you. They will like to create that willingness, that happiness in you before they take you to the operation theater. So don't think, you know, these are the laws of nature. And I just tell people, hey, just wait for a minute. You know, there is an old saying that you go to a tailor and say, hey, cut my suit according to my size. But now, we should not cut those laws of nature according to our need, which we've been doing for the last so many years. We're trying to change the laws of nature, which we cannot. You like it or you don't. Don't bend your head against the wall, because the laws of nature are just like a wall. They were there, they're going to be there. It doesn't matter how long it has taken human race to diagnose or discover those laws. But they were there forever. They will stay there forever. We cannot change those laws of nature, then why the hell are we trying to discover new ways? They were there forever, they will stay forever. So try, if you want to build your self-esteem, a number of people, at least my rough estimate in Pakistan is, the 70-80% people I've known, or I've counseled so far, they don't have that self-respect. You know, higher the ego, it's a simple rule of thumb, remember it. The lighter the argument, stronger the words. And it relates with the ego, the psychology of self-esteem. If you see the person has a high ego, remember one thing, higher the knowledge, not the education. You might be educated but not still have the knowledge. You might not even have discovered your own self. Higher the knowledge, higher the self-esteem and lower the ego. Lower the knowledge base, lower the self-esteem and higher the ego. And that is very much what you see around you on streets today. That how much ego an ignorant person has as compared to a person who is educated. He'll say, oh yeah, forget about it. So try to build up. Don't try to build up your ego, or don't try to satisfy your ego at the cost of someone. You cannot. You will never. So the best way to do is build up their self-esteem. Make them feel important people. And you will see the magic. You will see that it has directly affected your own emotional feelings. So you have to stay win-win. What is the winning attitude? Win-win. There are four situations. Oh, my way or no way. Either it's my way or no way. So it's win-lose. Either it can be a win-lose situation or a lose-win situation or a lose-lose situation. I don't want to do it and I won't let you do it. It's a lose-lose situation. That's something you must have seen. People like to win over something. They try to fight for it. And if they know that they cannot have it, they destroy it. Why do they do it? That's how we are tuned. That's how we've been trained, maybe. That's what we have learned. Hey, I mean, there are need to see the beginning. Lose-lose. They prefer to do a lose-lose situation. But there is always a win-win situation. So we need to target that win-win situation. Very important aspect of our life or emotional mastery is enriching our family, our own family relationships. We need to retain a long-term perspective. All those people or couples I have counseled in my private practice, somehow I've seen a very, very short-term perspective about the life. Very short-term approach. Oh, it's been 2 years and you know you promised me this, it never happened. Very short-term perspective. Somehow we are happy in having everything given to us, then try to build it together. So we need to build up all, you know, the first key of enriching the family relationship is basically have a long-term perspective that you have committed to stay together for always. You will see a number of curves, you know, like the business cycle, the number of curves, that's what the beauty of the life is. What will be the fun if we all know that nobody can kill us until 100 years? You think the life is going to be as sordid as today? No, it will never be. So maintain long term and then try to learn those things or tips and skills which can help you in enriching the relationship. Re-script your marriage and family life. My observation in a family counseling or marriage counseling is that they're moving into different directions. Yeah, both are moving. But the question is, in what direction? They're moving apart. I have my own mission, and she has her own mission. So as a family unit, just imagine for a minute, do you think that, you know, it's a very, very old sort of a phenomena. Okay, the husband and wife are both a part of a car. Right? Wheels of a car or something, automobile. Can you run a car with two drivers? No, you cannot. Can you run a company having two different vehicles? You have to have a corporate strategy. You have to have a corporate mission. You have to have a national mission. But how the hell are we trying to run our families totally differently? Having two different missions, having two different visions. It's not possible. So we need to come up with a family mission statement. Hey, as a family, what are we here for? What we want to do for this life, what we would like to do for others, how would we like to come across for the world? What are those things which are acceptable and what are those things which are not acceptable in this family environment? What are our core values? What are our strengths as a family? Who is going to head what? What is the roles? What are the goals? What is the obligation and what are the rights of the members of the family? We never ever do it. Just like a company, just like an organization cannot at any cost run without having a solid mission and a strategic document, we cannot run or stay happy in a family setting without having the same thing. We are living every day on a daily basis. And let's see how the day is going to be in the morning. And we'll see what we have to do. So what's happening? Every day the same mistake being repeated over and over again. Because it was never ever made clear to the other person that hey, as a family, it is acceptable, it is not acceptable. If one person or one party is doing something, how can you stop the other party not to do it? But that is only possible if you sit down together and try to come up with the family norms. Hey, as a family, that's what we will be doing. As a family, that's how we will be dealing with neighbors. As a family, that's how we will be dealing with other relationships. And as a family, that's what we want. But that's how we want our children to be raised. Hey, it is okay in our family to do this, and it's not okay at any cost in our family to do that. So, you know, this is just alignment, like you align organization strategy with the system and the structure and the people and training and development, just like the human system. What is a human system? Human system, this whole organization is a human system. Your family is a human system. An individual person is a human system. This group of people is a human system. And this whole society is built up of smaller human systems. So one, if one thing is affected, or one human system is affected, it is going to affect the other smaller human systems. So if a few tools and techniques are good for one human system, they're bound to be good for other human systems. So if the same thing we are using for our corporate life, why can't we use the same thing for our personal life? Why can't we have a strategic management course in our family, for our family life? If we take that course as a prerequisite to qualify as an MBA degree, why don't we do our SWOT as a family? What are our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats? What are our objectives as a family for the next year? What are our learning needs for the next year? And so on and so forth. Develop a family mission statement. Don't take your spouse as granted. Somehow, maybe 2 years, 3 years after the marriage, we start taking things as granted. And remember human psyche. If the human psyche is nature, there is nothing, you cannot do anything with it. You need continuous reinforcement. Somehow we take things wrong. Yeah, the mere fact that I'm living with you for the last 10 years, don't you think I'm still committed? Yeah, I never said it to you from the last 10 years. So it means that we're taking things as granted. That is not possible. It is not possible at all. We need to reinforce the feeling of security. We need to reinforce, I'm still with you, nothing has changed. Talking, communication, have open communication channel. Not only just talking about the world, talking about yourself as a family. Don't take her or him as granted. Reinforce the feeling, reinforce the sentiment, reinforce the promises, and so on and so forth. And we need to have, you know, that's again a sort of a gesture of reinforcement and respect each other, live for each other. You know, there are a few things which are your rights, and the other thing is totally different. You will get your rights, you can even fight for your rights. And a number of families come to me, hey, yeah, but he was supposed to do this to me, he never did so. Can you challenge him or her? Because he is not doing it. No, I cannot. It's not his right. Whatever your right is, you're getting it. But then, there are a number of other things. You know, only you cannot live your life just with the rights or after fulfilling the rights. There are so many other things which are dependent, interdependent on the relationships. Hey, okay, I never promised you that, but I buy you that. Yeah, last night you were awake for me till 1 o'clock waiting for me and you didn't have your dinner. So, next time I do the same for you. She can totally refuse. She can refuse. It's not the, you know, if you are coming at 2 o'clock in the morning, don't expect that she has to be there. If she is there, maybe she will expect something else from you. So it's always, there are a few things which are rights and obligation, and then on the top of it, there are a number of things which we do which are totally, or maybe 75% of the whole relationship as a whole. There are those things which are not mandatory. You cannot force someone to do it for you. Which is only possible if you are also doing something for the person, for the other person. So you are basically start living for each other. Now, the mind. That's the next step. You know, if you have read the psychology, there is a very interesting theoretical framework, theory, which you can maybe pick up any book on management, and it will definitely be the Maslow hierarchy of needs. The man has different needs, physical needs, you have emotional needs, you have intellectual needs. At a different level of your age, your different needs are driving you. If your physical needs are not met, you will not move. There is a possibility that you will not move and take care of your emotional needs. Once the physical needs are met, automatically, then there is another need. The man is always thankless. You have money to put in your tummy, then you want somebody to love you, to respect you, to be with you, and so on and so forth. Once that is taken care of, then 5 years. Now I want something here. That is next level of the need. You want your mind to develop, to nourish, to glow, and so on and so forth. I've seen people taking decisions about their life, major decisions about their life, just because of these needs. Give you an example of one person I know, a fresh graduate. He was given a job, a very good job, but that job was not in Lahore. It was somewhere in the interior Sindh. 4 times package of what he could have drawn in Lahore, city like Lahore. But because of the fact that his emotional needs were not met at that point in time, but physical were met by his father, he refused to accept the job. Whereas that job could have helped him in building up a career much faster than he would do it otherwise. So, unless your emotional needs are met, you will not move to the next level of your needs. So, for that very purpose, there is a very, again, it's a law of nature. Every single human being has to go through it. Now, all you can do is to accelerate the process. The very first thing, either once you're born or at any given time in your career, really the very first step is that you're unconscious and you're incompetent. You start your life being totally unconscious and incompetent. You don't know what's happening around you. You're unconscious of the environment. And you're incompetent. You don't have any skill. And the same thing is even true maybe once you start your job. Now, once you have the research says that most of people, they end their life in the failed circle, the vicious circle. They don't want to move on to the next stage. You need to accelerate the pace and you need to get out of that stage. You cannot acquire competence without being conscious. Because your conscience will tell you what you lack or what you need. Somehow this is a fundamental problem with the educational system, and now there are committees and committees sitting in the United States and trying to work out the core curriculum around this theoretical framework. That somehow the results which we get out of our high school education are not as good as they can be just because of the fact the first 3 to 4 years of the education, we are forcing our children to become competent without making them conscious. You see the difference here. First year, class one child, prep child, nobody has made him conscious of why he should go to school. But we force him to go to school. And even if he's sitting in the class, he will not perform the way he could have done if provided somebody could have made him conscious. So they say even if it takes 3 years before the class one, it is better to invest those 3 years making him conscious and giving him a choice which he will definitely, if he knows the cost of not becoming competent. Because that is the time when the child will wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, get dressed up, because he's conscious and he knows the cost of not becoming competent. Make him conscious. We force our child to recite the Holy Quran without making him conscious why he needs to recite the Quran. And the results you get at the age of 25, they don't even remember a single verse of it. Because forcefully, just taking as granted, just a norm of the society, he has gone through the process and he doesn't know why he has done this. Make him conscious. The same thing even applies asking your son not to watch TV without making him conscious of the consequences of watching 6 hours a day TV. Consciousness. The very first thing. And that's a dilemma in our society. A 25 years old boy in a classroom doing a master's degree, he is not conscious at all why he's doing it. And what exactly he wants out of it. It has just become a social norm. Either one of his neighbors has gone through it, or he has been sent. Maybe it has become a tradition that minimum education is a master, or you won't maybe get a good match, shaadi nahi hogi, and so on and so forth. So without having the consciousness, even if you do something, you know, but they say, unless heart and head combine, you cannot expect a masterpiece. If both head and heart combine in anything you do, expect a masterpiece. All those finest pieces of art which you see in your galleries worldwide are those where there was not only the skills, there's a lot of passion and heart went into it to produce a masterpiece. And I relate an example of it. There is a phenomenon in psychology which is known as Pygmalion effect. Pygmalion effect. Pygmalion, there is a full-fledged institute in the United States named Institute of Pygmalion Effect. For the last 20 years, that's all they're doing. They're just trying to research on Pygmalion effect. And you know what the Pygmalion study says? What they did was that they pick up sample of two groups. Two groups from the same school, from the same class. And it, the same example even relates with the belief system. So they picked up a sample of 10 students and they gave it to two different set of teachers. What they did was, okay, they took up the finest 5 students were given to a group of teachers and they were told they are the worst teacher, they are the worst student in the class. And the 5 worst students in the class were given to a group of teachers by declaring they are the best students in the class. Now you see the emergence of Pygmalion effect. What happened after 1 year? Those 5 students which were the rock bottom of the class, but the teachers were told they are the superstar of the class, they topped the class. And those students who were supposed to be the top of the class, the superstars of the class, but the teachers were told they are at the rock bottom of the class, they couldn't do anything. They failed the exam. So that is the power of belief. Dear teacher believe there is no need to invest time. They are the rock bottom. Doesn't matter what we do, they are going to fail. So that's what happened. So the Pygmalion effect is the same that. Now I will go back to the history of the Pygmalion, because what is Pygmalion? There is a, in the Greek mythology, that is the Pygmalion, there was a person named Pygmalion something. Back in 16th century, he produced a marble
sculpture.
Not sculpture, it was a rock on a rock, it produced a face. It was not like a full-fledged sculpture. Half of it.
Don't touch it.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I think I should put it here. So what happened was that he produced a piece of sculpture, of half of it, on a rock. And when he was able to, when he produced it, he fell in love with that piece of rock, because it was such a nice piece of rock, or the face, and he fell in love. 25 years, 30 years, his friends started asking, why don't you marry, why don't you marry? No, I don't want to marry. Why? Because I want to marry a girl like this sculpture. His name was Pygmalion. So everybody used to make fun of him. At the age of 80, he died. The next century, everybody witnessed the girl exactly the same person as of the scripture. So that led to a formation of a new phenomenon, that if you focus so much on something, even God may be created for you. So that is the Pygmalion effect, and it's the 4th century going on. They're continuously they're researching on the phenomena Pygmalion. They're still instituting Pygmalion effect. And the Pygmalion effect is simply, again, the belief system. If you think you can, you will. If you think you never, you will never. So the first of all, the consciousness of doing it. If you don't give your people's skills and knowledge, just give them a positive attitude, give them the right conscience. They will go crazy to find means and ways to acquire skills and knowledge. But somehow we just force, want to give them knowledge and skills without giving them the right attitude. That's why the results, you were not surprised. They are aware of the value of a degree, not the value of the knowledge which is associated with the degree. How many of you will go to a school if you know that you can buy the degree? Not many. If you can buy a degree, why to gain knowledge? Why? Again, because we are not conscious of the value of the knowledge. So, the next step, which is the second phase, it says, develop the consciousness and just leave them right. Leave them. Give them enough time. The time will come when they will come to you and say, hey, we want to become competent. So that is the third step of it. You have given them the consciousness in the second phase, and the third phase, they will become conscious, they will stay conscious, and they will also become confident. But the whole story doesn't end there. Because there is a human phenomena that if you are conscious and if you are also competent and you live with the same attitude of yours, hey, I know everything. And that's how most of our people live. Once you walk out of the school or a college with a final degree in your hands, that time your learning totally stops. You think that you have become a super boy, and you think whatever you have acquired through different means is much more than, or maybe you know, more than you require it. So automatically you move to again the fourth position, because again you have become unconscious that you need to learn, but you stay competent for a while. So if you live few years with that unconsciousness again, you will automatically go back to the first one, again becoming unconscious. You were already in the fourth stage, but again becoming totally incompetent. That's where most of our society is today. That we've gone through that education cycle, but at our age, at the age of 30, 40, I'm sorry to say, we have almost become again at the first level unconscious. Maybe the skills which we learned 40 years ago are no good. Maybe the time has come that there's something else we need to acquire. So please try to get yourself out of it, because the knowledge, the mind will get rusted. You don't